I'm Joe Lurie, and this is the Graham Sham podcast series on Kaya FM.
This is the Graham Sham on Kaya, where we go behind the filters of the Graham. I'm Joe Lurie, and today we're speaking to Kaya Dlanga. And I say, if there were more Kaya Dlangas on social media, there'd be no need for the Graham Sham. As one of the most positive role models out there for the youth, he's been painfully honest about his imperfect and messy journey to success. He places dreams firmly in reach of our youth and is an inspiring example of hustle, hard work, perseverance, and the right kind of impatience paying off. Kaya's timeline may be carefully curated, but it's perfectly balanced with truth-telling and dream-selling. He makes you want his life and then inspires you to go out and get it. Fair?
I don't know. It's up to the observer.
You know, Kaya,
yes.
I started everything in life before you. I came into this world a couple of years before you. I had a head start. Yet here you are. With three books, multiple awards, adoring fans, and somehow I still like you. What kind of sorcery is that? What is the Kaya Dlanga magic?
I was going to say it's because I'm closer, but that's the one thing that's going to make people not like me.
There's some magic. I've said this about you so often. Mm. You know, we started Twitter, we were all like early adopters.
Yeah, small family, I remember.
But we were very small family, early adopters. We were like the early, I want to use air quotes and say influencers. Mm. There was an article, we were the Twitter kings and Twitter queens in Cosmo.
Oh my word.
That was like 10 years ago, right?
That's so crazy. Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, the rest of us fizzled out, and then you got another 400,000 followers. What happened? Why do I still like you?
No, you're so weird. Someone once asked me, and I couldn't answer the question. Like, there was, how come you have so many followers? And this was like quite a few years ago, and I didn't have an answer. And I think the more I thought about it, I realized that it, I said, I think it's because what I did back then, and I think what I still do now, was to have this mindset that a lot of people wanted to be involved on Twitter and social media, but they were very afraid because it was this scary, dark place. And I figured if I made it easy for people to come in without thinking that they're being involved, they will join. You know, they'll do that. So I'd ask like a random question like, what was your school song? There's no right or wrong answer. I want to say, what is your school song? And no one's going to attack you for it. And the next thing, you see yourself, you're responding to something mundane like that.
It's not polarizing.
Exactly, yeah. So polarizing. And as you know, I would tackle subject matters like that to make people comfortable in the space.
Yet at the same time, you were polarizing. You know what I think?
Yeah.
Truthfully, my theory on it is the rest of us just tried too hard. I think we were trying too hard and you were just like me, don't like me. And that was like, well, then people really liked that. I really wish I didn't like you. So I saw you recently at a memorial service it was really inappropriate, the conversation we had, because the first thing I said to you when I saw you at the memorial service was, I hate you and your nice life on Instagram. Like, can you please stop going to Coachella? So when you post these things, because you had just gone on this amazing trip to Coachella with your amazing group of friends and you were living this nice life, when you post these things, are you showing off? Or is it like, for you, I mean, whether you're in Joburg or you are in California, is it just another day for you and you're going to show it in the same way? Or, I mean, is it the modern day version of showing off?
Well, I don't have the answer to that, but I'll never forget this one time. I was in Dubai, so I posted, I think just before Instagram, so I posted this thing on Twitter and picture of me in Dubai, blah, 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 but something about Dubai. And this person says, oh, you're showing off. And then I said, you know what? The funny thing is, last week I was in rural Eastern Cape and I posted pictures.
No one said you were showing off.
I came from and no one said I was showing off. So I'm trying to understand what am I allowed to post and what am I not allowed to post.
People audit you, hey?
Yeah, no,
like,
they do.
They really do audit your happiness. It's yes. like what you're allowed to be happy about and what yeah. you're not.
But I think for me, like when I'm also quite aware. I think one should be conscious, I think, and aware of the country we live in. And and I suppose people can show what they want to show and how they want to show it. I just worry when, you know, everything that you post is this luxurious life and there's brands and all of that, which is completely unattainable for most people. And it just makes life for them, I don't know, like this dream that they can never reach.
It's unattainable, but... Kaya, you drive a Jaguar, we all know this. It's a beautiful car. But I'm not mad at you, and you know why I'm not mad at you. And the reason I'm not mad at you, and yeah. the reason I brought you in particularly, you didn't participate in the Gram Sham, and I never asked you to, and the reason I didn't, I will never be mad at you about this, because you have always been so honest about your story.
Mm.
Everyone knows, and anyone who follows you because they know your story.
Yeah.
Everyone knows you were homeless at some point. Everyone knows your story. It's not unattainable because you attained it. You didn't attain it by nefarious means. You didn't attain it by, I don't know if you slept your way to the top. I haven't read your book.
That is funny.
The last book yet. So maybe, I don't know. But like, attainable. I have read in some of your books that you have slept with some dodgy people. I don't know what you got out of it. But what I'm saying is you can't say it's unattainable to be in your 30s, to drive a Jaguar, and to live your life, because it happened.
Yeah, I think... As much as I want to say that, yes, it's attainable and it can be done, I'm also very aware of my own privilege. Because I always talk about the fact that, like, the village that I came from in the Eastern Cape was my family, even though maybe someone who came from city and to look at my family, they'd be like, oh, shame, these poor kids. You know, you're dirty, you've got a big kwashioko kind of stomach.
There's levels, you know, and to all privilege, of that. Yes. Yeah.
So whereas for me in my village, I was more privileged than some other kids. I'll never forget this one day. So I was there in the Eastern Cape, and some guy, I'm standing in front of the hut, it's in the morning, and this guy walks past, and he looks and says, Kaileto! And I was like, if someone says Kaileto, it's definitely someone who knows me and who grew up with me. And I said, this guy I went to school with, right, in the Eastern Cape. And he looks like a typical rural man who's grown up in the village. That's literally what he was. And then he says, you know, you are very, very fortunate and very lucky that your parents knew the value of an education and the fact that they took you out of this village because you had a, because his parents... asked him to leave school in standard 4, and he had to go and look after the family and go work from standard 4. And and then, whereas for me, I was out there going to this Catholic boarding school, learning to speak English, still in apartheid South Africa. And then after that, Mandela's released, I end up going to this, you know, Hudson Park, really good school. Yes, my mother was struggling, you know. We're living in a two-room house and no electricity and all of that. But I still managed to go to this good school. And I was in close proximity, you know, to white people. And when you are in proximity to white people, you have a little bit more access. Your English is a little bit better, if your English is a little bit better, and you're a little less threatening. And therefore, certain doors open easier for you than some guy who is in the rural Eastern Cape. So I think it's attainable, but there's an element of fortune that comes with it.
Look, there's definitely your story was not easy.
Yeah.
It was not... I think it's a great motivational story for the youth. And I like that you've told the whole story from beginning to end. And you haven't left out... the hard parts of the story. You haven't made it seem glamorous. It wasn't a glamorous story. Nope. There are parts of that story, you know, I mean, I went to AAA. I know that it's not easy to do it under the best circumstances. So I feel for you how hard it must have been to do it under hard circumstances. I feel for you, but I cannot even imagine that story. So I like that people have a full rounded story to look up to. And I wonder, so when you put out stories like that, do you put them out to share your truth, to motivate people, to inspire people, or just because it's your narrative and you want to share it?
It's my story and I really just want to share it. And part of the reason I tell these stories is because, you know, I just don't like this dream selling, you know, that people have, where it looks like everybody has had this amazing life, like things just, you know, happened and you mushroomed and became this amazing person out of nowhere. But mostly for me, and I think it's also so that I don't forget.
Yeah.
And I know that when I write it down, it's a record for me in terms of like, wow, this is what I went through and this is how I feel. And I almost in recognition of the past that I went through and not forgetting. And it's also a part of keeping you pretty humble and connected. Because if you don't forget those hard times, you are unlikely to suddenly think of yourself as somehow, you know, much better than other people. And there are certain mistakes you won't make when you're constantly grounded to that level. You won't make the mistake of, you know, saying that, yeah, you know, like, I'm sorry, I won't talk to you because I only talk to people from a certain tax bracket. You know, I've heard people say things like this. And I just don't understand how people can talk like that. And for me, and I think when I tell my story to myself and share those stories, it just keeps me grounded.
It reminds you who you are.
Yeah.
Is it fair to expect, because my expectation is that people should not be like that. I don't care who you are, how much money you've made, how famous you are, how much screen time you've had in this country, anywhere in the world. I don't know who you think you are. We all came out of someone's uterus like the same way. I don't know where you get the idea that you can be like that. So my expectation is that you should be the norm. Like the fact that you share your story, you tell your truth, you should be the norm. Is it fair? Is that a fair expectation? Is it fair for me to expect that people are honest? Is that a fair expectation that people should post a balanced view of themselves?
Well, I suppose we can't really, you know, share the same stories or tell them the same way. And, you know, some people's journeys take longer, you know, to reach maybe a certain level of maturity, self-awareness, and general consciousness. And sometimes it takes, you know, me only ever posting my Louis Vuitton bags, like all the time, you know. And then maybe I get to a certain point in my life, 10 years, 20 years down the line, where I'm like, actually, it's okay for me to actually be honest about other things as well. And I also think what happens is people tend to, because they think people have certain expectations of them. And even if they want, you know, to say and be honest, they are so afraid of revealing that part because all their lives there's this very particular narrative that they've been showing. And at some point, maybe someone just comes out and they just, you know, and they're honest. And also doesn't mean that they're not being honest. I think they are being honest about a very particular and specific area, I think, of their lives and just neglecting all other parts of their lives.
Well, I think that's where I want to establish the line. Where's the line? When people post heavy stuff on Instagram, some people will complain they're just looking for attention. When people only post fluff, others will complain that they're so fake. Where's the balance?
The thing is, it's like there isn't. I don't think there is a balance because, It's impossible to make everybody happy.
Actually, I mean, if I posted pictures every morning of this, I woke up like this, you'd unfollow me, right? No one wants to see that. Okay, so the truth about Instagram is we choose what people see and know about us. Okay, so you're a master marketer. We know this about you. Award-winning. How many awards?
A lot.
A lot of things. A lot of things.
In the 50s.
Tell me in three words what you decided people will see and know about Kai Adlanga.
So you said?
Tell me in three words what you decided people will see and know about you. And I know that you must have thought about this.
Well, I think when I looked at it so far, and then I was like, I wonder what people see when they look at my Instagram. Because someone went and looked at, I don't know, someone was... look at someone's Instagram, they're like, oh, this person's like this and like this. And then it's like, oh, I wonder what people think when they see mine. I think for me, it's real, informative, funny. I think those are the three things.
Yeah.
So, and I think those are the three things you'll see. I will either give out information about stuff that I know that I find very interesting, that I think more people should know about, or I will talk about, you know, my spirituality. I'll talk about what I went through or perceptions or views I have in relationships. Or I will write about, you know, a Bible verse. I will post, you know, myself and Coachella. I'll post, an expensive watch or a car that I've been given or something like that. So those things I will do. So I try to be as multifaceted as possible. Because no one is one thing.
And then you sneak your girlfriends and they're very subtly.
Yeah. Well, that's not very subtle, is it?
No, it's a very like a, what is the word? It's not like, you. It's not jarring. Mm. You infuse them into your timeline. But, so I've noticed this. So you're not shy to like have your girlfriends as part of your life on your timeline. But if you break up with them, you never discuss the breakup.
Yes, this is true.
So is that like a conscious thing?
Because I suppose when I start dating them, I also never discuss that I am dating them now.
You never make
we
it official.
We are starting to
date. It's not
date
Instagram official.
And these are the reasons we are dating. You know, I don't do that. And so I want to break up. I don't say that, you know, this is why we broke up.
Besides an official statement on breakups, what else will we never see you post? What's not our business?
I think there are a lot of things I wouldn't post, but I think it's something that I have a lot, mostly if I have like a moral problem with something, I will not post that. If I have a, I don't know what else I wouldn't post, but I think there are a lot of things that I wouldn't post. I can't think what those are right now, but as many as there are things that I would post, there are many that I wouldn't.
Okay, so we discussed a little bit, like, you not intentionally, you like to share your story. So the truth is you do live a good life. Yes. I mean, you've got great friends. I mean, we know you've got like a very solid squad.
Yeah.
You travel a lot. I mean, if there's anyone who should be causing Instagram depression, technically it should be you. But I find you disgustingly inspiring. And as I say, I really wish that I didn't. Because there's just so much about you I should be jealous of. And I'm just not. Like, it's just everyone's rooting for you to just get bigger and bigger and better and better. Do you really like do you not get a thrill out of inspiring people?
I do not. And one of the reasons I don't like that, I always find, for example, inspirational speakers a bit of a sham.
That's a whole different genre.
Yeah. And I find that a bit of a sham. And a lot of the time, people are talking about things they've read about and seen from other motivational speakers and all of that. And it's not your life. And it almost feels like you're selling this quick fix bandage to people. And life is not a quick fix. And it's a long struggle. It's a and for me, it's not. No, I don't get a thrill out of it. But I do enjoy it when people get a positive when they feel positive
about something that I mean. I think that's what I mean. It's rewarding.
Yes, it is rewarding.
Yeah.
So for me, I do enjoy that. But I don't want it to be like a thing, you know, that I feel it's some kind of responsibility that I have. Because then now I'll start having to curate, oh my goodness, what inspiring things should I say today?
So you have to try too hard. And then you start to lose
exactly.
people.
Exactly. And I lose myself in the process. And I think you probably lose yourself before you start losing people.
So you do inspire people to steal books. I want to talk about that. Because, you know, you released your third book.
Yeah.
And after the Bible, your second book was the most stolen book.
Yes. Which was very funny
when
I saw that.
What is that about, Skaya?
You know what? It was so, I was shocked. You know, one of the things Hulisani, I'll never forget. She went to an exclusive books and she said she was looking for my book. She couldn't find it. I was like, what? What do you mean you couldn't find my book? She says, I actually went to the store and then I asked them about the book and they said, oh, they should be here. And there should be like 30 copies or something. No, there were 28 copies that were still available. That morning, that content, gone. All the books are gone. All. So, and I think it's one of the reasons I think that book was stolen a lot is because a lot of people can relate to the story. And they've just never seen the story written in a book form. And I think that's why. And it also goes to show the hunger people have for books, but they don't have for books that are relatable to them, but they don't have the means to buy the books. It's I mean, it's flattering, but it's you know, my royalties are gone.
So do you know that? So I had a copy of The Youngsters book that you wrote. I had... two copies of your second book,
because
and I had you released an extended version. Mm-hmm. All of them were stolen. So not only do you get stolen at the store, the secondhand trade of your books. It's shocking.
So
they were all stolen off my desk at work.
That is hilarious.
So and one out of my home. Come to think of it. So there's definitely something.
Yeah, I wonder why. I think now with this new book, I'm going to ask people to like post your
stolen
receipt.
Copies.
No, post your receipts.
You should also ask people to post their stolen copies. Oh, there's definitely something there. Okay, so you are known to be the king of the caption. Like, I think that is, I know you push for a Man Crush Monday. I mean, I know that is your dream in life. You have 50 awards, you were an author of 3 books, but you really like your goals is Man Crush Monday,
Man Crush Monday
to the point that you post your own
so
Man Crush Monday.
It is so elusive that I have to do it myself now.
Please, if anyone's listening, please, can you just make Hyatt Langer your Man Crush Monday so we can put this to rest, because I can't see any more of his own Man Crush Monday posts. They are quite scary. So you're known to be the king of the caption. You're a wonderful storyteller. How much, I want to ratio numbers, give me numbers. How much of it is fiction and how much of it is nonfiction?
Which is?
How much of it is true and how much of it is false? Like how much of it is made up, those captions?
Well, but some of them are completely ridiculous, like the Man Crush Mondays or...
No, like of your, come on, like your, some of your stories, I mean... I guess that's the premise of your new book as well.
Yeah,
like,
these things really do happen
to me.
Some
of them don't seem like they could possibly be true. Some things you think to yourself, come on, Kaya.
Wasn't it Mark Twain who said that truth is stranger than fiction?
Like I can imagine you falling asleep next to Thabo Mbeki. I mean...
I cringe every time I think about that.
You were sitting right next to him and you fell asleep at what? It was like a state dinner.
No, it was just like a normal, it was like a discussion he was having with about 20, 30 young people. And I happened to be sitting next to him.
And you fell asleep while he was talking.
Yes, but I mean, there was a very good reason why I fell asleep.
Oh, please,
the reason I fell asleep was because I went, so the night before I went to the, because I the then US ambassador, I developed a relationship, a close relationship with him and his family and some of the people who worked with him. So there was a party in Pretoria at the embassy, at his residence. With this residence, and I think I got home at about 4:30 from Pretoria. Got home, and imagine it was a big party. And then I, at 7 in the morning, I had to go to a breakfast. So it was a friend's girlfriend's birthday. And got there, breakfast, immediately after the breakfast. He had organized some obstacle course thing that we had to do. So rigorous physical activity for like a good solid 2 hours. And I was sweating. And then I had to go home, shower, pick up my friend Zynga, and then go to
Mbeki. And then,
and then what like, was worse on. Is that I wanted to sit comfortably wherever and be okay. Because, and literally I sat down. And when I sat down, this gentleman comes to me and says, excuse me, make sure no one sits next to you. The president's going to sit here. And I panicked immediately. And I was like, God, I hope I don't reek of alcohol.
You would think the panic would give you shots of adrenaline and you would not fall asleep. But yeah. Guys, you heard it first. This is not a Graham sham, hey? He really did fall asleep next to the president. Only guy at Langa, hey?
Yeah. Oh, I seem to embarrass myself next. You know, when it comes to presidents, there's a time where I also spoke to. I was doing a thing for YouTube, so they wanted me to interview Paul Kagame, you know, president of Rwanda, in Rwanda. So I go there and I'm interviewing him, and I turn to the camera, right? I turn to the camera and I say, "Hi, welcome to YouTube Worldview. My name is Kyle Langa, and I'm here to interview President Paul Kagame." Of Nigeria.
Oh my. Oh. These things really do only happen to you, right?
When I think about it. And the, you know,
everyone, is that in your book?
There was such, there was such a collective in the room. Like everybody, like they all stood at attention and it felt like they thought I was going to be taken out and be shot, you know?
But, well, I mean, it's entirely possible.
Yeah. And then, but I laughed. I was like, oh my, I don't know what happened. I'm so sorry. I am.
You laughed.
So sorry. Yeah.
Your,
I laughed.
Your special Kayad laugh.
And then he laughed and everybody relaxed. And then we carried on to the interview. Oh man.
So you, I actually, now I believe that all your story, it's not, it's not a sham. All your captions are actually true. Oh. Kaya, have you ever found love on Instagram?
Have I ever found love on Instagram? I actually found love on Twitter.
That on does not shock
two
me.
Two occasions. And then on...
we have receipts on this. You're going to give us Twitter handles.
you already know. You know, Poiti.
Yes, we know.
And then and Priscilla, you know, my yes, most I recent know. Ex. So yeah, I met both of them on Twitter.
And on Instagram, nothing.
No.
I want to know what kind of DMs you get, and I'd like you to read some first. I'd like you to open your Instagram.
I actually get very random DMs.
I'd like you to read the top DMs.
The top three DMs.
Maybe you should just hand it to me because I feel like you're going to auto-edit.
Okay, no. Okay, here it's like someone commenting on something I posted. So,
No, I don't want to see anything that they've commented on what you've posted. I just want to see some random DMs that people send you.
No, I actually, people generally comment. They don't send a random DM.
No one slides into your DM.
No. Funny enough, I remember literally there was a time when...
Jim, you aren't anyone's man crush my day.
No, do you know what it is? This friend... you know what happened? This friend of mine said, so funny, Shaka this one year when he was interviewing me actually on my book launch. He went, he said, give me a phone, took my phone, and he went on Twitter and went to my DMs to see. And then I was like, I don't get any weird DMs. He looked and there was nothing weird at all that I was getting. But then what he said, oh my goodness, the kind of people who DM you. That was the only thing that was shocking, I think, to him. But this friend of mine, when I said that I don't get any random DMs or women throwing themselves at me, and she said that it's because people, maybe they just don't know how to approach me. And they think, because I'm not entirely predictable, because the one moment I'm funny, the next moment I'm writing something very serious.
Quite serious.
The next moment I'm commenting on politics. So they don't know how to approach me, which is a good thing.
Which is strange also, because I think your Instagram persona is so well-rounded. Mm. It's actually a really good reflection of who you are as a person.
Do you know what?
Person.
I don't know if that is true. Maybe it's Instagram or Twitter. I don't know. But a lot of the time, I've often met people who would say, I meet them and they're like, oh my goodness, at the end of whatever, I thought you were so arrogant, but you are so nice.
Really?
I thought you would be so arrogant. And literally, I don't know how often I've heard that.
I find your Instagram persona more so than your Twitter persona. Mm-hmm. I think because your Instagram, you're able to expand more. Yes. So like you, it's very light mm-hmm. in a way and very funny. Mm-hmm. You're very funny. You find humor in a lot of things.
Yeah. So because you... I mean, the world is horrible enough.
It really is, right? I'm very sad that we couldn't find anything in your DMs.
No, literally, there's nothing in my DMs. Like, nothing. It's disappointing.
It is disappointing. We should delete this whole thing. I don't think we should post this. What is your message to people listening about what they see on Instagram? My concern and the reason the Gram Sham came about is there's a lot of false stuff that goes out, fake stuff that goes out onto Instagram, and kids feel a lot of pressure because they're not living up to this unattainable fakeness that's out there. They feel inadequate. They feel like they're not enough. And that's why I think it's very positive that there are people out there who do share a well-balanced view of life. But for the ones that, feel like they're not enough, that they're failing, what do you want to say to them?
I think they should look at what people are posting and not assume that that's how they too need to be. And I think what people need to do is to, how can I just be true to myself? And I think for me, that is the one thing you need to do. At the same time, on Instagram, there are a lot of people who post certain things because they want to become brands, if you will. And their whole mission in life is so that, like, I want to be an influencer. So I am trying to impress brands. And then when brands see my page, they'll be like, okay, these are the kinds of things that I do. And therefore, then they will pay me because of that. And I think people post on Instagram in various ways for whatever reasons. And I have the luxury of, even though maybe I have a lot of followers, is that I don't need to impress brands. Mm. If a brand comes to me and they want me to do something, I have a fee that I have. And I say no 90% of the time when I'm asked, by a brand to do something, because a lot of the time I don't believe in the thing.
Yeah.
Or I don't use the product. But I do have the luxury because I've got a reasonably well-paying job.
Yeah.
So I don't need to compromise in order to impress some brands.
Yeah. That's good advice. Mm. I think you should follow Kai Adlanga. Please make him your man crush Monday. Please buy his book. Don't steal it.
These things really do happen to me. That's the book.
They really, really, really do. Kaya, thank you. I appreciate you coming and talking to us. You're a great role model. Really, 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 I'm going to try and hate you. I'm going to work on that. But in the meantime, I like that I like you.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. That's so sweet. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, yeah. Kaya.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Gram Sham podcast series with me, Joe Lurie.